Good morning. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, and I'll be here this week filling in for Joy Cardine. From the color of our teeth to the look of your fingernails to the sound of your ears, our bodies are telling us things every day about the state of our health. And it's possible that you may even recognize some of the signs. Yellow eyes, for example, for jaundice. But how many of the things your body is telling you do you really know? That is the premise of the book that we'll be talking about this hour. It is titled Body Signs, From Warning Signs to False Alarms, How to Be Your Own Diagnostic Detective. It's an easy-to-read, well-organized book with a surprising amount of fun anecdotes, and we'll be talking with one of the book's authors this morning. What do you think that your body is trying to tell you? And if it's trying to tell you something, are you paying attention? And then, will you actually do something about it if you need to? If you'd like to join in the discussion, our number is 800-642-1234. That is the toll-free number you can use anywhere you can hear me. If you're calling from the Madison area, you can use our local number, and that is 263-1890. You can also join us by email, and that address is talk@wpr.org. Our guest this morning is one of the co-authors of the book. Joan Liebman Smith has a PhD in medical sociology and is an award-winning medical writer. She's written a couple of books, and her articles have appeared in American Health, Ms., Newsweek, Self, and Vogue. And she is the co-author of the just-published Body Signs, and we welcome her to Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning.
Good morning, and Happy New Year.
Well, thanks. It's good to have you along. And first, I want to start out talking about a little bit of the background of the book, and also just let folks know that one of the things that we're not going to do on this show is try to diagnose people on the air. You're not a doctor, I'm not a doctor, and we don't want to really get into that. But we can talk about the book and an awful lot of the things that we can pay attention to in our own lives. And let's start with the premise for the book, because if I recall, it's your story, your personal story. You had a health issue that sort of was one of the things that led to you thinking about writing this in the first place.
Yes, absolutely. About 25 years ago, I gave birth, and I was a nervous, anxious mother with a cranky baby and nursing her very often. And I was losing weight rapidly, which I thought was really a great thing. I didn't think of it as a sign.
Sure.
I was jittery. I was hungry all the time. That happens when you nurse a lot. I was thirsty all the time. I was hot all the time. I had all these strange signs that everyone said, oh, you're a new mother. That's just typical of being a new mother. And I also sort of looked a little weird, but I had lost a lot of weight. And one day, my sister-in-law's sister at a luncheon said, Joan, you have a goiter. And I said, what? And she pulled me into the ladies' room and said, look at your neck. And I had a lump the size of a lemon in my neck. Now, I hadn't noticed this. My many doctor friends, including endocrinologists, had not noticed this. My husband hadn't noticed it. And here was this obvious body sign that nobody noticed or said anything about, and I certainly didn't notice. I went to the doctor the next day. He said I had Graves' disease, which is a hyperthyroid condition, very severe Graves' disease. And when I went to the specialist a few days later, they said I would have been dead in a week if it hadn't been treated. So this was a very serious sign, a series of signs, multiple signs I ignored, other people ignored, that could have killed me had I not done anything about it. And at that point, I decided I don't want other people to go through this, that we have to pay attention to our bodies and the signs our bodies give off, because we might think they're weird or annoying or embarrassing, but we really need to pay attention to them and do something about them.
And it's typical, I think, that, well, maybe it's not typical. Maybe you'll tell me it's different, but it seems typical to me that most people do sort of tend to ignore things like that, either thinking it's normal or thinking that if they check into it farther, that it is going to be trouble. And tell me about that element of things, what you may have found in your research. Do people, obviously you wrote a book, so it means at some level you think that people don't pay attention to these sorts of things.
Absolutely. I think there's certain things that people tend to ignore. It might depend on the person. Certainly, mm-hmm. Some embarrassing things related to their genitals or body functions they might ignore and just be too embarrassed to talk about. But even feeling lumps in your breasts, some women feel them and are afraid to go to the doctor because they'll find out something's wrong. There are flashes that you could see in your eyes that is very normal and could be very benign. A lot of these things are absolutely benign. They're nothing to worry about. But if you get this little inkling that, gee, maybe this is a little weird and maybe this isn't right, you should take note of it and go to the doctor. I think too many people ignore their body signs thinking they'll be labeled a hypochondriac. And I don't see anything wrong with being a hypochondriac, because had I been more of one, I wouldn't have gone through what I went through.
I want to talk about how you wrote the book. Neither you or your co-author are a physician. So how did you, and there are a lot of things in the book that you talk about, how did you find the medical advice? How did you work all that into the content?
Well, first of all, we're both medical writers. Jacqueline Nardi Egan has been a medical writer and editor for 30, 35 years. We have a panel of 18 physicians who we vetted the book with. We consulted when we had questions. We got advice on what to look at. We used the same medical literature that they use. We used medical libraries, medical journals. We scoured every legitimate medical source there were, including the Internet. There's a lot on the Internet. And everything we wrote in this book was vetted by this panel of experts. In fact, we surprised some of them by some of our findings. We were up on some of the literature because we get press releases from the various medical organizations, and I would send them the original article, and they would say, wow, I didn't know this. So everything in the book is legit. We have funny, as you mentioned, we have some funny anecdotes and things, historical facts and things like that that are really in not the medical literature, but in the historical literature that we got. So everything is really well-researched. I'm a research sociologist, so that's my passion.
And one of the things I wanted to talk about a little bit is how the book is arranged. And I have to say, I expected it to be drier. And I know that sounds kind of like a backhanded compliment, but it's a very easy book to read. It's well-organized, and it does have a lot of, I guess I had never thought I'd hear myself saying this, surprisingly fun anecdotes. And interesting things that I didn't expect to learn. 800-642-1234 is the phone number that you can use if you'd like to join in. We're talking about the just-published book, Body Signs, From Warning Signs to False Alarms, How to Be Your Own Diagnostic Detective. And Joan Liebman-Smith, the book, as I say, is relatively, it's well-organized, and you start at the top, as you say, and chapter one is the hair. And, you know, I think men and women both go right to this chapter. It's a logical place to start in a lot of ways. But tell us about how you decided to organize the book and start from the top on down.
Well, we didn't think the book would be read by people from cover to cover. We thought they'd go right to the signs that bother them. And it just was a logical progression. I think any of us who have kids know the song Ahead and Head and Shoulders, Knees and Toes, and that sort of clung to us, and we decided to use that format because we also feel, and in the back of the book we have a chart where you could keep track of your body signs. We feel that you really should periodically go over your body and see, is there anything awry, anything you should notify your doctor about? And it's very easy, I think, to have a logical sequence. So if you start with your head, say, gee, has my hair been falling out? Has the texture changed? Do I have strange bald spots? And you could note that down, and when you see your doctor, you could mention that to your doctor. Or if it's really something that maybe you should be alarmed about, if you look in the book, we tell you what's benign, what might be a warning sign of something else, you could call your doctor and say, hey, you know, I think there's a problem here. Can you check it out? So I just think it's easier for the person to read the book this way, and it's how I would like to read a book.
Well, I have to say it's exactly how I did it, because selfishly I just went to the things that I knew that I had, and I went right to those chapters.
Absolutely. And the other fun thing about the book, we also wanted it accessible, and maybe you would see things in your spouse, your friend, your coworker that you could say, wow, you know, gee, you have this strange spot on your eye. Have you ever checked that out? So the signs might also be something you've noticed in someone else. So I figure once people go through and see what's been bothering them or irking them, they might say, gee, you know, this is something that I've noticed on other people as well. I thought it was a fun way to do it. In each chapter, I start out with a historical, well, we start out, but being the sociologist, this was my passion, started out with kind of a historical, not a dry historical, but a little background information on social and cultural aspects of hair and eyes. And in the eye chapter, we have a thing on the evil eye, which is still today a very important thing in many cultures. So there's stuff you could learn in the book besides medical.
We're talking with Joan Liebman-Smith, one of the authors of the newly published book Body Signs, From Warning Signs to False Alarms, How to Be Your Own Diagnostic Detective. And we'd like you to join in the discussion and try to find out what your body is trying to tell you. 800-642-1234 is the toll-free number that you can use if you'd like to join in. We have some open lines for you right now, or you can call from the Madison area if you happen to be there at 263-1890. 263-1890. talk@WPR.org, by the way, is the email address you can use. We'll be back, and we'll continue our discussion right after this message here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. It's 21 minutes past 8 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 9, Veronica Rickard is in this morning for Kathleen Dunn, and they'll be taking a look this morning at what Wisconsin will look like in 100 years. Veronica's guest will discuss a possible future scenario if climate change continues. That's coming up later this morning. This hour, we are talking with Joan Liebman-Smith. She is a medical sociologist and award-winning medical writer. And she, along with her partner in this endeavor, Jacqueline Nardi-Egan, have written a book called Body Signs, From Warning Signs to False Alarms, How to Be Your Own Diagnostic Detective. And we've been talking a little bit about the genesis of the book, and we're waiting for your phone calls. 800-642-1234. In Madison, it is 263-1890. And Joan Liebman-Smith, before the break, we were talking about some of the chapters of the book. And, you know, when you were talking about it, you mentioned the Internet. And that raises a question for me because, you know, in this age of the Internet, I have to say, is there a need for a book like this? I mean, all the answers are out there, right?
Well, the answers are out there, but you have to know which Internet sites to go to because there's so many Internet sites that are really not legitimate. And also, I think the main thing is a lot of people have multiple signs. So something might be bothering them on a particular day, and they might go to the Internet and check it out. But there are certain conditions, many thyroid conditions and other autoimmune conditions, that affect many parts of the body. And in order to put the pieces together, you really have to look at a book. And in the back of our book, we have a chart of various conditions that are quite common that could affect multiple body systems, your eyes, your skin, your hair, your body weight. And without looking at this, at the whole picture, it's very hard to know, is there something wrong with you? The other thing is the book is full of signs that you wouldn't even go on the Internet for, things that you might not even think of are body signs. For example, an earlobe crease. And a crease on the earlobe, it's been quite controversial, but the evidence is mounting now in the medical literature that it really can be a sign that you're at increased risk for heart disease and diabetes as well. Ear creases run in families, and so do these conditions. But that's something that I don't think a person's going to say, gee, I have an ear crease, I'm going to look it up in the Internet. So by reading the book, I think you're going to find things. I don't want to scare people, but I think you're going to find things you hadn't even thought of that may be a body sign.
And I have to say, the ear crease was news to me, and the picture helped a lot, too.
Uh-huh.
So you know.
Well, they had a wonderful illustrator.
How much of what is in this book is just plain common sense that, you know, maybe we knew over the years and somehow have forgotten?
I think some of it is, but I think a lot of it certainly came as a surprise to me in doing the research. When we started out, we had certain ideas of what would be in each chapter, and I would say each chapter is probably three-quarters of things we hadn't even thought about. So I read a lot. Jacqueline and I both read a lot of the medical literature, and they're just things that never occurred to me.
25 minutes past 8 o'clock, we're talking about the book Body Signs with Joan Liebman-Smith. She is one of the co-authors of this book that goes through your body and gives you some background, things you should be watching for, some anecdotes about your body, and a lot of health-related advice that you might not be aware of. And it's a great read. It's easy to read. And if you'd like to join in the discussion and find out more about it, here's the phone number, 800-642-1234. And we have an email from Christy in Rhinelander, Joan. What would you say to the person who feels that they have a medical problem and goes to their doctor, who then tells them they're worrying about nothing, but you really feel like something is wrong? Should you just keep seeking different opinions? She says she is a nurse who worked in a clinic and often heard doctors scoff at patients in their offices. And that has to be a very real concern. And I imagine physicians these days are feeling that pressure from people who do a lot of internet research or read books like this.
Right. I think that go with your instincts. I think if a doctor ignores your signs or your questions, go to another doctor and find someone who is willing to listen to you. And I think, again, whatever it is that's bothering Christy, she should write it down and maybe look at the book and look at some other body signs that may be related to that. Because, if something occurs in your eyes, it also could occur in your skin, and it could be like a thyroid condition could show up in various places. When I was going through my strange signs and ignoring them, I wound up seeing a sleep specialist, a psychiatrist, because I couldn't sleep and I had mm-hmm. palpitations, and he told me to count sheep. Now, you know, fine,
I could have told you that.
You could have told me that. And I must say, when I didn't pay his bill, when I told him what was wrong with me, he didn't charge me another, he didn't send me another bill. But he poo-pooed what he thought. Well, it's psychological, relax, count sheep. Well, my heart rate was over 120. I would have had a cardiac arrest in a few days. So I don't want to scare people or turn them into hypochondriacs, but I don't think that doctors should poo-poo it. The other problem is because of managed care and our health insurance industry, doctors really don't want to run a lot of tests. They're rewarded for not doing diagnostic tests. Prevention in this country is not a very big thing. They wait until you're really sick and then treat you. And I've worked in the area of prevention for many years and strongly believe in preventive medicine. Get the disease before it hits you. So I think Christy, as a nurse too, she should really be well advised to find someone who's willing to listen.
Let's go to the phones right now. And Louise is with us from Milwaukee. Good morning.
Good morning. My question has to do with, as I'm listening to this discussion, it strikes me that a lot of what you're discussing really could be used to evaluate whether or not your doctor is very good. In other words, when the doctor is discussing with you before a physical what your ailments are, what kind of questions should the doctor be asking so that you are going to be properly cared for in a preventative sense?
Right. Well, I think that what we go through, starting with the hair, the eyes, the ears, I think a good doctor really should go through these body parts as well and ask you, you know, have you noticed any changes in your body? Have you, you know, when you go to a doctor, they look in your eyes. They do look for these signs. They tell you to open your mouth and say, ah. And they're looking for many of the same signs that I've put in the book that I never really knew to look for myself. The state of your tongue, for example. There's a lot on what a tongue should look like. And we have healthy signs, too, of what a normal tongue should look like, what normal skin should feel like. And I think that there are good doctors and bad doctors. I think now they said the average time you spend in a doctor's office is 12 minutes, again, because of the insurance problem and managed care. A doctor should pay attention to you, look at you, and listen to you. And I think that because a lot of doctors are so pressed for time, I think it's really helpful to take the chart that or something similar that we have at the back of the book. Keep a list of what's been bothering you, when it started, and also, very important, what drugs, over-the-counter drugs and prescription drugs and any kind of supplements, vitamins that you're taking, what milligrams you're taking, and when you started taking them and bring them in. It's amazing how many body signs we found are reactions to drugs. And I don't mean just antihistamines and antibiotics. I mean supplements of zinc, too much vitamin A, various things like that could also make your body go awry. And I think it's important to have these things. I believe in taking control of your health. If you depend on the doctor, I don't think you're going to be able to practice good preventive medicine.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up on that because you're talking about this age of managed care, average visits, 12 minutes or whatever it might be. It really does sound to me as though people, whether you think of yourself as a healthcare consumer, I guess, that you do bear a certain amount of responsibility yourself that you almost have to these days because the question is who else is going to do it?
Absolutely. And who knows your body better than you? And after you read my book, you're really going to know your body. But I really think we're responsible for our own health. I really do. And I to this day regret the fact that I ignored all those signs for so long and put my family through. I had to wean my child in one weekend. I had to leave home because I had to take radioactive iodine. I became radioactive. It might not have gotten to that state had I paid attention to my body. And it really wasn't up to my neighbor doctors and my friend doctors or even my husband. It was up to me, and I ignored it. And I don't want other people to ignore their bodies.
Let's go to Diane now, and Diane is in New Auburn. Good morning.
Good morning. I couldn't agree with what she's saying, more importantly, because I've had a lot of symptoms and signs and have had some autoimmune diseases. But anyway, recently I've had an experience, and I'm still in the learning process. I had an extremely bad skin rash starting in mid-September, which I'm still itching from now here in January. And the dermatologist was positive it was atopy and allergic to some kind of medication. We made some changes. But the biopsy came back and said something totally different, erythema annulare. Uh-huh. So I'm still in the process of trying to figure out, are there connections to some of the gastrointestinal things I'm having, some of the other tendon issues I'm having, some of the, so it's a huge, huge area. And it seems like right now my body is shouting at me that something is very seriously wrong and I'm needing somebody to make connections. And I don't know if I have a question as much as just a comment on what you're saying to be right on the mark.
Well, I think it's a very important comment because, as I said before, they're multi-system diseases that affect things that are you would never in a million years think are connected, especially with the skin. Gastrointestinal things very often come out in the skin, in the breath, in the eyes. And I think, again, just looking at a single body part is a mistake. And part of the problem going to specialists is they concentrate on one body part. I mean, obviously a good dermatologist would know, well, this could be connected to the gastrointestinal tract or some other body system. But they get so bogged down in their specialty, it can be a problem. I think that, again, you're doing the right thing by looking at your whole body and going from head to toe and seeing, is this strange? Is it my body shouting at me in what ways? And keep a list. And when you go to the doctor, tell the doctor. I really think this book will help people be a better partner with their doctor. It'll help the doctor put the pieces of the diagnostic puzzle together. And diagnosis is a puzzle. And I am so much in awe of doctors, having done the research for this book, how much they have to know and memorize. And, in fact, my doctors, I think, are excellent. When I go to their offices, they're not embarrassed about going on the Internet or pulling out Merck Manual and looking up the things I'm talking about, because you can't know it all, and you can't remember it all. So I think doing some research yourself and being a good partner with your doctor, you'll get to the bottom of it, I hope.
And that sort of brings up a question I had about the actual writing of the book, because you do cover a lot of ground here, but you do it in a couple of hundred pages. And, how did you – I imagine you could have written an entire, set of books just about chapter one on the hair. So how did you limit yourself when it came to the signs that people ought to be paying attention to, because there are just so many?
Well, one thing it doesn't so much apply to the hair chapter, but one thing we did not include pain. The obvious things that you might call symptoms that really shout at you and tell you, go to a doctor right away. We didn't include pain, fever, vomiting, pus, itching to some extent, but severe itching. These are things that you really should go to a doctor about. So eliminating those categories really narrowed it down. We try to choose things that probably not are most common, because some of them are very esoteric and not likely to be seen by even some of the doctors that we thought were interesting. But we tried to pick things that people are going to maybe know that they've noticed on themselves or someone else, and also the things that really are danger signs. There's certain things that may be rare, but they could be very dangerous, and we want to warn people. We have signposts, we call them, mm-hmm. and some are warning signs, and some are danger signs, and some are healthy signs, and the danger signs are things, go to the doctor, call the emergency room right away. The warning signs are things to pay attention to and mention it to your doctor the next time. So we try to help people know what's really a serious thing. For an example of a danger sign people might not think about, obviously you think, you know, if you're in severe pain, your chest hurts, that type of thing, mm-hmm. you call sure. the emergency room. But when I was doing this research, I didn't know this, and I think it's very important to know that most of us have floaters. Those are those strange little things that float across your eye, your vision. They right. look like spiders and things, and as you get older, you're going to get them. And they're physical. A doctor could look in your eye and see those floaters that you see, and they're very common. If you have floaters along with something called flashes, which we sometimes see when we're tired. They're flashes of light, or they could look like lightning. Floaters and flashes together could be a sign of a retinal detachment. So if you're seeing these floaters and getting flashes, go to the emergency room, because if you have a retinal detachment, you could lose your eyesight. And that's an emergency. And we don't think about things we see as an emergency. There's no pain involved. There's no bleeding involved. So it's a very important thing to pay attention to these things.
800-642-1234. In Madison, it is 263-1890. And as you say, you talk at length about the danger signs. You've got the warning signs. And actually, I was on the chapter about eyes here, and we've got the danger signs about the retinal flashes and so on. But then the warning signs tend to have more be more of an informational thing. So, for example, just opposite what we were just speaking of, the warning sign, a nurse's health study found that women who suffer from migraines that are preceded by a visual aura are at increased risk of heart attack or stroke. Researchers don't know yet if the same is true for men. And so then you've got these little informational nuggets sort of spread out through that, you know, people ought to be thinking about it at the same time, and not an emergency, but just sort
right.
of something to know.
A lot of those warning signs are hot off the medical presses. They're things that just came out in New England Journal of Medicine and the Journal of American Medical Association, and they're finding associations with certain of these signs with diseases. And it doesn't mean if you have this, you're going to definitely have a heart attack. It just means this is something to look out and keep your eye on, literally. And I find it reassuring to know that this may be something. I have heart disease in my family, so any of these signs that may indicate that I have that just makes me more diligent about taking my medication, trying not to eat high cholesterol food. Again, prevention is really important. And if you know you're susceptible or at risk for something, you can take certain steps. Yeah, if you have breast cancer in the family, you go for your mammogram. If you have heart disease in the family and you have an earlobe crease, which I also have, you might be a little more careful about going to the doctor. Oh, the other thing, at the end of each chapter, we have a section called Signing Off, and it lists all the different specialties that might deal with that body part, because a lot of times you might not be sure who to go to, and usually the first line is to go to your internist or family practitioner, and then they have to, because of, again, managed care, refer you on to someone else. And I think it makes good sense to talk to your internist first, but when Christy Colton said she was ignored, if the internist ignored you, look in the book and see what other specialties might be relevant and make an appointment.
Joan Liebman-Smith is with us this hour. We are talking about the book that she co-authored called Body Signs, From Warning Signs to False Alarms, How to Be Your Own Diagnostic Detective. If you'd like to join in, here's the toll-free number for you. It is 800-642-1234. Or you can call our local number in Madison if you happen to be in the area. That is 263-1890. I'm Gene Purcell. I'm filling in for Joy Cardine today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 19 minutes before 9 o'clock. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 9, Veronica Rickard is in for Kathleen Dunn this morning. And have you ever wondered what Wisconsin will look like in 100 years? After 9, Veronica's guests discuss a possible future scenario for Wisconsin. If climate change continues, it could be a different place than it is today. That's up after 9. This hour, we continue our discussion with Joan Liebman-Smith. She is a Ph.D. in medical sociology and an award-winning medical writer who has teamed up to write a book with called Body Signs, From Warning Signs to False Alarms, How to Be Your Own Diagnostic Detective. And we've been talking about that for the past few minutes. Let's bring some listeners into the conversation right now. Jean is with us from Sparta. Good morning, Jean.
Good morning. I was listening and you were referring to eye auras and whatnot, and mm-hmm. That was something very similar to what my mother described when her illness was finally diagnosed, and it was called temporal arteriolitis, and it's a disorder that usually is common among women over 65, but at any rate, she had gone to the family doctor and then suddenly gone blind in one eye on one Thanksgiving Day, and we all rushed to UW-Madison, and finally an eye doctor in Janesville diagnosed her condition, and the only way it could have been treated was through heavy dosages of prednisone, and I think the doctors never looked for it for mother because she was so tiny, right? She probably weighed 100 pounds, and it was just interesting that an eye doctor was able to discover her condition so quickly, and she too felt like a hypochondriac, and as though doctors were treating her as if she was just making this up. So
I think many hypochondriacs save their own lives.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, the therapy that she had to be on was very heavy dosages of prednisone, and she was always somewhat of always cared about her appearance, and it just grotesquely disfigured her. And she, well, unfortunately passed away due to prednisone therapy. But, but at any rate, if that disease could have been caught early on, maybe the intense prednisone therapy could have been lessened somewhat. So, yeah, it sounds like a good
absolutely.
Book.
I think that's the whole idea, Jean, of prevention, is that if you can get it, if you could prevent one and get an early diagnosis, you're going to, prevention isn't just not getting the disease, it's getting it early so it doesn't advance to a state where you're going to have very intense surgery or treatment or whatever. Things, when they get really bad, you're going to have very intense treatment. So I think that it's unfortunate that she was ignored all those years. There are other things with the eyes that are interesting. We came across some amazing signs I never would have thought of. There's phantom visions where people, as they age and they're losing their eyesight, sometimes start... You might call them hallucinations, but they're actually not hallucinations that psychotic people see. And they see beautiful scenes and flowers and trees, and sometimes they could control them. And this is a sign. It's a pleasant sign, but it's unfortunately a sign of loss of losing your eyesight. And when people actually do go blind, the visions go away, and they're quite sad about that sometimes. There are a lot of fascinating things that we discovered in the book.
And I wanted to follow up on what you said about hypochondriacs sometimes save their own lives, because it's kind of a fine line, though, I think, between, you know, hypochondria and actually something being there. You know, it's almost like crying wolf at a certain level.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that going to the doctor all the time with one thing after the other, the doctors burn out and you burn out. But I think that's why it's helpful to keep a meticulous chart of when these things started, what medication, what vitamins you may be taking, just to give, not just to go to the doctor and say, I have this, I have that, because it'll show the doctor in writing what you've been experiencing and for how long, and maybe it's something the doctor could look at later and come back and say, you know, I looked at your chart here and the thing you brought me, and I put the pieces of the puzzle together, and maybe you do indeed have something else. I mean, there are, certainly are hypochondriacs out there that can drive everyone crazy. And unfortunately, maybe my book will make them worse. But on the other hand, if Jacqueline and I save lives, we'll be thrilled. And maybe we'll annoy some doctors because we'll make some hypochondriacs out of some of their patients. But to me, saving a person's life or saving them from going for horrible medical treatment is worth it.
Let's go to another call right now, and Rick is with us from Fond du Lac. Good morning, Rick.
Hey, good morning. Interesting turning on the radio. Went through a situation with my son. I self-diagnosed him with bacterial meningitis when I lived in Arizona. He's about a year and a half old, and he had chronic sinusitis, and I did some due diligence myself on the Internet, and some things started to stack up, and luckily I caught it early enough. It was even questioned while I was at the emergency room, and it's a long story, but thank God he's all right. And we were in ICU for 14 days. My point is historically I've been someone to challenge authority figures, and I see doctors someone in that role. In this situation, I went through a numerous from my pediatrician to the ER to push them because I thought I had it diagnosed correctly. He was dying, you know, in the emergency room. The last thing they wanted to do was a spinal tap. Was what have you found in research since there's more self-diagnosis going on, I think, with web-based enhancement as well as books like yourself? Doctors become very defensive when you question them and probe. I've found myself standoffish and maybe almost sometimes going the other direction a little bit as far as being open to trying alternative treatments or probing more than just taking someone who's, you know, might fall into the norm of a diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rick, I think it's great that you pursued this. You saved your son's life. And
yep.
I mean, who cares about alienating doctors or questioning them when you save their lives? Actually, Jacqueline and I, our next book that we're working on now is called Baby Body Signs. So we'll be dealing with those early years because babies can't tell you what their signs are. The parents have to really observe them, and that's really important. But I think when you think your child or your wife or your friend is dying, you do whatever you can. And as far as alternative treatments, a lot of doctors, they're now calling them complementary treatments. And a lot of doctors, at least I live in New York, are embracing those that are legitimate. And there's a lot of research studies that show a lot of what we might call alternative are really legitimate, good treatments. And many doctors are now paying attention to acupuncture and nutritional supplements and other things like that. And finding a doctor who may be open to these things can be very good. So good luck to you.
800-642-1234 is the toll-free number that you can use to join in the discussion in Madison, 263-1890. And you're talking about your next book, Baby Body Signs, but I'm wondering, the book that we're talking about now, this can pretty much apply to any age, or is it?
Well, I would say from late adolescence to through adulthood. Obviously, puberty comes out with a whole other slew of signs. The hormones are in such imbalance that we couldn't possibly cover that. So this is really adulthood, young adulthood to old age.
Let's take another call right now, and Mona is with us from Appleton. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for this program.
Sure.
You just mentioned the word old age, and that's what I was calling about. I only take blood pressure medicine. I'm 79. And at the same time, whenever I have my appointment with a doctor, I mention the fact that my legs are kind of weak and wobbly and my arthritis is acting up and that. And it's kind of put off to old age. Should I just accept that?
I don't think anything should be accepted as just old age because as you get older, a lot of systemic conditions start affecting you. And weak legs and feeling wobbly could be a sign you could have some slight neurological condition. Again, I'm not a medical doctor, so I can't diagnose you, but maybe you could see a rheumatologist about weakness. There are other things. The body does get weaker. We lose eyesight. We lose hearing. Many things happen. But if you feel that this is really not right, It could be a reaction to medication, or it could be something else that's troubling you, and you might want to see a specialist or ask your doctor to refer you to a specialist, saying you're concerned that this has happened too suddenly, and this is not you, and you don't feel you should have this. And there are things to treat, even things that happen to us as we grow older. There are treatments to take care of some of these really disturbing signs. We don't have to suffer. So I think, Mona, if you pursue it a little more, you might get some help, I hope.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
800-642-1234. We heard from Ruth in Eau Claire, and she wanted to know if the book has anything about creases or crevices in the tongues and what that might indicate. And I happen to remember that there is the tongue is a big deal in this book.
The tongue is a big deal.
Yeah.
We have great illustrations.
You did, actually. Yeah.
And there, I don't know if I can say this on the air, but these are medical conditions. There's one called scrotal tongue, which is really bizarre, mm-hmm. and geographic tongue. A lot of these tongue conditions are inherited strange tongue, like the scrotal tongue or fissures in the tongue, and they're benign. There's nothing wrong with them. The problem is if you have deep fissures, like grooves in your tongue, they could get filled with bacteria, and then you could have some infections. You could have halitosis, and a lot of dentists and doctors recommend brushing your tongue to keep it healthy. Geographic tongue is another thing which I think is fascinating. The tongue actually looks like a map, and it has patches that travel. You have patches that travel on your tongue to different parts of the tongue. And it's usually an inherited benign condition, but sometimes people with geographic tongue, if they eat spicy food, it starts hurting them, and it's irritating. And there's not much you could do about these things, but if you know spicy food makes your tongue hurt, don't eat such spicy food. But I think keeping your tongue healthy by brushing it is probably a good idea. Black hairy tongue, now that's a really gross one.
I'll agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, black hairy tongue is, if you look at it, it's pretty bad. And that can happen as a result of poor hygiene. It could happen sometimes when you use too much mouthwash, you could get that. Some medications, like Pepto-Bismol, things with bismuth, can make your tongue turn black. Certain treatment, drug treatments, radiation can make your tongue turn black. But if it's poor oral hygiene, you could certainly do something about that. You know, the tongue actually has hairs. When I did the research for the book, I was amazed. I didn't know a lot of this. The tongue has hairs, papillae they're called. And if the hairs don't shed, like the hairs on your head constantly shed, if they don't shed on your tongue, that's how you wind up with black hairy tongue. There's also white hairy tongue, which, you know, again, could just be from medication or from too much toothpaste. So the tongue could tell you a lot, literally. So looking at your tongue is a good idea.
Deneen is with us now from Platteville, and good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to make a comment about, being able to pay attention to others around you, particularly my son. He was diagnosed when he was 8 years old with juvenile diabetes, and he had so many signs. And when you were describing your own signs of your Graves' disease, at first I thought you were talking about diabetes, because he was thirsty all the time, going to the bathroom all the time, but each little symptom could be explained by something else. You know, it was summertime, so he was drinking a lot, and he was playing soccer, so he was really thirsty. And I'm a nurse, and I missed all these signs. And it wasn't until he was really sick that my husband and I kind of sat down and looked at all these things and realized that he was very thin, that it just hit us. But it took us so long to figure it out. And my mother early on even said, you know, could it be diabetes? And I was, no, you know, it wouldn't be that. Why would he have diabetes? But there were so many signs, but each one of them we had all these little explanations for. And maybe we were just in denial, but it wasn't until we really sat down and looked at everything that we were just blown away by it. We did end up looking up on the Internet, and, of course, he had absolutely every single symptom. But I feel sad because I think my child suffered for months until we finally figured it out. So I think your book could be useful in not only paying attention to your own body, but to others around you. You know, I've put on this diligence on myself now that he's been diagnosed, to be aware of not just myself, but my children and even my husband. So,
I think that's exactly what the purpose of this book is, not to make people feel guilty. I mean, I feel stupid that I didn't put my signs together and notice them. But what can you do about it? I mean, the thing is, you move on, and the next time you're more diligent about these things. And you telling your story about your son will alert other people that you really have to pay attention to this. It's very hard when you have something yourself or you live closely with someone to put all the pieces of the puzzle together. And I think that's why I wrote Body Signs, and having a book like Body Signs is useful because you can say, well, gee, maybe this is something. And again, because at the back of the book, I have diabetes as one of them, and Graves' disease and other thyroid disease, where it affects so many parts of your body and so many diverse types of signs that if you have a concern, if someone says, gee, maybe you or your kid have diabetes, you could look it up and you say, oh my God, it covers this and this and this and this. And I think it can be useful without scaring people. I really don't want to scare people.
And what is the reaction to the book, Ben? I mean, there's a lot of stuff in here that conceivably could scare people. You don't want to do that, but at the same time, I found it to be very readable. What are other people telling you?
I've had very positive feedback. It just came out a few days ago.
Oh,
so
wow.
It just came out December 26th. But I was interviewed on another radio show, and I was talking to the interviewer about one of the signs I thought was really interesting, which is a loss of sense of smell. And a lot of teenagers lose their sense of smell when they're in sports people, when they're in athletes, when they get hit in the face or hit on the nose or hit in the head. It's apparently one of the first senses to go. And it seems to be more common than I ever thought it would be. But loss of sense of smell could be a sign of so many things, nasal polyps, even tumors, diabetes, there's diabetes again, thyroid disease, even zinc deficiency. But the most astounding thing, and this just came out in the medical literature in the past few years, is that loss of sense of smell can be a very early warning sign of Parkinson's disease and Alzheimer's disease.
And on that note, I'm afraid, I hate to leave it on that note, but we are out of time, so folks will have to buy the book, I guess.
To find out about that.
Yeah. Joan Liebman-Smith, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time. We've been talking about the book Body Signs, From Warning Signs to False Alarms, How to Be Your Own Diagnostic Detective. Carmen Jackson produced this hour. We had on-air production from Christina Taylor, and I'm Gene Purcell. I'm filling in for the rest of this week for Joy Cardine here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.